everybody, and welcome back to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are happy to be queer to answer your questions. I'm Gina.
And I'm Cheyenne.
And class is now in session. Today we are talking about the bedroom dynamics, sexual dynamics, and we have gotten into tops versus bottoms versus pillow princesses versus everything else versus. But we're going to get a little deeper into the dynamics of things this episode. So that's what's on deck for today.
Hell yeah. I'm excited to talk about this again because I feel like it's been a while since we've, like, almost a year since we had our tops bottoms versus episode, right? Or has it been over?
It's been a while. I mean, we did that, and we also did the queer sex ed, which is not the same because that was more like educational than just like talking about dirty, fun, amazing sex, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely been a minute, so I'm excited to get into it. Also, I have to say this before we get started. My one coworker recently started referring to me as Miss Top because she found out I'm a top, and she said something. This is definitely going to be like the meme for this episode, so little spoiler if you listen to this before I post the meme, but she said something to the effect of like me being a top and bottoms clothing or something the other day. I was like, that's funny. And I was like, she just was basically like, I thought you were like, I don't know, a bottom. And then I like got to know you. And she was like, I could tell there was a little like dominance, a little like leadership in there. And I was like, thanks. It's my Aries moon, Capricorn rising.
Oh my God. That's so funny. It's funny because like the more masculine my haircut looks like, the more I'm like, oh no, am I turning into the soft mask that's not a bottom? Because that is not, I'm not about to change my sexual dynamics over a haircut and over like not presenting quite as femme as before. Mm-hmm. But then I see others with my haircut and I'm like, that's a bottom, baby. But I'm like, oh my God, is that what I'm projecting now?
No, I think, you know, a lot of queer people, we do have this like stereotype in our heads that like the more masked you are, the more likely you are to be a bottom. But then like, I think in the baby gate mindset or like even in like the cishet world, they really think it like reflects like a cishet dynamic to them. So it's interesting. I know a lot of people who see like a more masked presenting person and they're like, oh, that's the top. Because they just like think like masculinity equals dominance or whatever. And I don't know, I think it's fun because we're just keeping everyone guessing. You can't tell by looking at someone what their preference is going to be.
I feel like for a while there was a era of like the stone top or the touch me not, you know, depending on like what you call it. And I feel like they almost gave masculinity in like queer women world this not correct image of like, oh yeah, we're just like as stone tops, we're just like out here topping all the time or whatever. But I don't feel like that's like as common as the younger you go in queer women. I don't know tons of people who are like that outside of like TikTok.
I definitely feel like it's like a rarity out there, but like without a stone top you wouldn't have like a pillow princess. Like it's like a dichotomy and they, you know, balance each other out.
There's a yin and yang for everyone. Yeah,
exactly.
So you identify as a top, like 100%, or like how do you feel about the word verse?
So I used to identify as a top. I'm like on the the top to top leaning verse pipeline. Like I am going more into my like soft submissive energy as I am with someone who like makes me feel comfortable enough to like explore that side, and as I gain different like life experiences that help me tap into that. Like I had to go to pelvic floor physical therapy for months before I could even handle a finger inside of me. So it was a while for me to come to this stage in my sexual journey, but like, to come to it. I was like thinking about this the other day, actually. I was like, am I going to be like a full bottom by the time I'm like 30? Because they say you like reach your like sexual peak around the age of 30. And I'm like, am I becoming more submissive over time? I don't know. I got a question about this. But it's, what is it called or considered when you like to top, but you don't want to be the dominant one? And I think there are a lot of like different phrases that people use for different things. Like, I don't necessarily think that these types of things have one specific definition. And you and I kind of talked about that. Right. And I think one of our Patreon episodes about how with gay men, the bottom is seen as like the submissive, the pleaser, and then with queer women and sapphics, the top is kind of the pleaser and the bottom is
right,
like the one receiving the pleasure. And it's like, it all depends on like context and stuff. And I don't know, like I feel like as time goes on, I went from being like a more dominant top to now I'm becoming more of a bottom, but I'm still pretty dominant, but also like willing to tap into submissive. Like, I don't know, it's hard because there's no like set definition or set mood.
Right,
it's just whatever I'm feeling that day, that's the vibe we go with. How do you that's identify fair. Before we answer that question?
I feel like I'm mostly top. I don't feel like I have a lot of bottom energy because I feel like, I don't know, I'm not like, I'm definitely not like crazy comfortable with the whole spotlight being on me, which it was so interesting talking to my gay guy friends. Like you'd said, when I mentioned that on our Patreon, one of our Patreon episodes, how like when they, cause my gay guy friends are bottoms and they're like, I'm very focused on like pleasing the top in this scenario. And I was like blown away. Cause I'm like, but as a self-proclaimed top, that's like my job is to bring pleasure to my bottom. So like that really threw me for like a loop. And then it did make me think like, is it more just like dominant submissive? Is it more like giver and receiver? Like, I don't know, not to even make it binary, not like gender binary, but as if there is just like one or the other. I just can't say that I'm a bottom because I that like already makes me feel like, oh my God, you're gonna come and give me so much like attention that I don't want. Like that makes me feel very like, oh no. Like if I even were to identify that way. So I don't even know that I'm like versed. Like I probably said this on the podcast, like when I've sex with my girlfriend, it's mainly like me doing things to her, which is a lot of fun. And then I'm very turned on. So then she just like gets me off a little bit at the end. That's not to say I like never go first, but if I do go first, it's probably because there's been so much buildup already. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to be the buildup. I want her to be the buildup. And then once we're both built up, then I can go. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
I'm like that too. And I definitely like get more turned on from doing stuff to my partner. Yeah. Like that's part of the journey for me. And I was like thinking while you were saying this, I was like, I wonder if Gina felt the same way when she was with men, like you didn't want the spotlight to be on you, and how much of this is like a product of misogyny and the patriarchy and like sex being used to like please men, that it like carried over into our queer sexual identity, where we have almost been like trained to get turned on by turning the other person on first, and we don't want that like attention on us. And maybe it's not that we don't want it, but it's that we were conditioned to not want it or not expect it. I don't know, like I'm just like getting super philosophical because I was thinking about that in context of you, but then I was like, well, that also applies to me because I also am a pleaser. And is that taught or is it just who we are, or both?
You know, probably. I think I was more of a the gay guy version of a bottom. I feel like is what I was when I was having sex with men. Like my goal was definitely still to turn them on more. The difference is I just wasn't having an orgasm at all, number one. After they had an orgasm, it was over. But and this is where I think it's very hard for like me and how I identify on like the Kinsey scale, so to speak, and like pansexuality versus lesbian stuff, because I definitely think there are men that I did have sex with just because of compet. And my goal was really just to like turn them on because it was like a self-esteem booster. Yeah. More so than like I was so turned on and like, I don't know, there, it still served a purpose, but it was a different purpose. But there are certainly men that I did hook up with that it was very mutually satisfying. And I like, it's hard to decipher where the compet line is and like what line to put the sexual experiences I had like over there and over there. But right. I will say that I feel like coming from when I first was having sex with men to having queer sex, I feel like I was more willing to be penetrated because it was like, oh, this is like what sex is. This is what we do. And like, now that I'm having sex that I'm comfortable with, nobody's penetrating me. Like my girlfriend's putting maybe like one finger a year inside of me. And that feels more authentic. So I feel like the penetration is where compet got me, because that doesn't feel authentic to having sex, but pleasing my partner does and kind of always did. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Like, I don't know. I think like, I think about like when I was having sex with guys and I'm like, was I even wet enough to be like going at it the way I was? Like, I probably was not. And then I'll finger my girlfriend for like 10 minutes and I'm like fucking Niagara Falls by the time she gets to me. And that's what's like, that's just fucking biology. Like there.
That's so interesting to hear you say that though, because for me it was like the opposite. Like when I first started having sex with non-men, I was like, oh, I finally am free from like penetration and I don't like this. Like I can finally like redefine sex and have it however I want, which is how I've lived it for the past almost a decade. And I'm just now discovering like the magic of penetration. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe I went this long without it. But it's like, the difference is there's like a hot girl doing it to me. And in this specific instance, it's with a plastic penis that I don't have to worry that I'm going to get pregnant from.
No, but like, I mean, there is a different risk factor when you're having sex that could get you pregnant versus sex that could not get you pregnant.
Right.
You know what I was just thinking too, that is a big difference between when I was having not queer sex versus queer sex. I felt like I was very self-conscious about men eating me out, because I was like, is my pussy normal? Does my pussy smell? Did I shave enough? Did I, is it weird that I shaved? Is there bumps? Like, I was always very self-conscious about my body with men. And the second I started dating women, I was like, put your face in between my legs. Like, I no shame, no worries. And then the longer I dated women, the less self-conscious I am about my vagina. Stop shaving, stop worrying about anything. And that is just not a luxury that I personally had while dating men.
Yeah, I think it's definitely hard when you are not experiencing sex with a vagina yourself, because when you're in the between the legs position, you realize how little any of that shit matters, or like what might bug you might not bug someone else, or vice versa. And like, how much of those things that we're taught to be insecure about, or like how much it actually is hot that a vagina smells like a vagina. Like there are so many different things that you don't realize until you're in that position. And then you're like, oh, actually I've been fed lies by media and society my whole life. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Well, back to the question that we actually never answered, just had a whole conversation around. No regrets there. But again, somebody did ask, what is it called or considered when you like to top, but you don't want to be the dominant one? Which I'm actually trying to wrap my head around this in like the queer sex that I'm aware of. So like, it's basically, are they looking for a like power bottom who's going to like tell them what to do, and they're going to then just like follow the instructions and do it rather than like taking control?
Yeah, I feel like it's called, like, a lot of people refer to this as being like a service top, like you're servicing the other person, but you're not necessarily like in control. But yeah, maybe you want like a power bottom type, or yeah, like a dominant bottom, like someone that you're just going to like please. Yeah, they take the reins, they take control a little bit.
Yeah, that's where there's like how this episode is called, like, dynamics, because there is like layers. It is who's quote unquote topping and bottoming, but then who's in charge, because that could change depending on who's having sex.
Yeah, it literally could change every like minute of your sexual experience depending on the kind of sex you're having and like the kind of person you are sexually and the kind of person your partner is. Like, that's the beauty of it, the versatility, one might say.
The versatility,
yeah.
Speaking of, our next question actually says, I am a verse switch and so is my partner. Fucking love the rest of this question. How to avoid 3+ hour sex so that we can get to bed at a decent hour. Amazing, though.
Yeah, like, we love that for you. I mean, the least sexy response I have to this is that you could set like a timer, like after an hour, hour and a half, we gotta stop. It's over. Which is something I have suggested to my girlfriend recently. And she was like, no, we're not doing that. Like, we're not setting a timer. Gosh. Like, that can be unsexy. It could be sexy for some people who like the time constraint, like racing against the clock to orgasm kind of thing. My personal advice for this kind of situation, though, would probably be to not have sex before bed, or if you're gonna have sex before bed, it's gotta be at least like 5 hours, so you still have like 2 hours to like wind down and actually go to bed. I would maybe, if you have the time or if it fits your schedule, have morning sex or right after work sex, but maybe right before bed just isn't gonna be a good time for you if it's gonna be a acting the rest of your day. Maybe if you go to sleep at like 10 every night, don't have sex after 6 p.m. because you know it's gonna fuck up.
Don't feed the gremlins after midnight. Yeah, like so my girlfriend and I have had like kind of scheduling conflicts when it comes to sex, because could we like, would we have time for like quickie here, quickie there? Probably.
Yeah.
But that's definitely not the way that we feel the most satisfied, especially because like aftercare is very important to us and like how we connect. And like, we've had very open conversations when we have had quickies and then we don't really have time to like cuddle and connect afterwards. And my girlfriend's like, yeah, that doesn't make me feel good. Like, I don't feel good afterwards if we're not like having that time.
Yeah.
And that is important because I don't want her to leave especially a session of sex not feeling like that was great. Like, that would break my heart. You know what I mean? So like, it has decreased how much sex we are having because we care more about the quality of the sex we're having rather than just like checking it off.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of self-consciousness about that, especially because I come from like toxic, like former partners, AKA men, who are very concerned about like how much sex we were having and stuff. And like, that's still something I'm unlearning, but in having a lot of the conversations about like how we feel after we have sex, the quality of the sex we're having, even if it's not like, you know, in an ideal world, we'd have sex like at least twice a week, and that our schedules literally don't allow that. So like, if these people have the schedule where they can have sex every night, oh my God, that's like incredible. We don't have that. So like, if we have one really good sex session a week right now, I feel like, good, we made that time. That'll obviously change with our schedule, but that's because it's not going to take, I mean, we're not having 3+ hour sex sessions that often anyway, but like,
yeah,
if we're going to take our time and not rush through things, that's not something we can have infrequent amounts. And so it's kind of like a balance of quality versus quantity, because if you want to make sure you have all of that time, it's not always going to fit into your schedule every night, you know, especially because like getting to bed at a decent hour is actually very important for like your mental health and your like life balance and everything else you have going on. So like, you know, that's something you have to find the balance of.
Yeah. That's like a good thing to think about. because I know, like, every time I have sex, I'm like, oh, that was so good. Like, I wish we did this more often. But also, if we were doing it more often, the quality would probably suffer because of energy levels or time constraints or whatever. So yeah, I think that is a good thing to talk about with your partner. And also this question and you talking made me want to ask. So are you and your partner generally like in the mood for sex like around the same time? Because that's an issue that me and my partner run into is she likes morning sex. And I like night sex, but she goes into work. She leaves for work at 7 a.m. So nothing is getting done in the morning. Maybe on a weekend, probably not. I like to get up and have my 4 cups of coffee first. And, you know, she's asleep on the couch by 8 p.m. So do right. you have that kind of dynamic in your relationship? Or are you both kind of in sync with each other that way?
My girlfriend's pretty much always down to have sex. Like, yeah. I don't know that she's ever been like, not right now, unless she was like sick and I wasn't going to like try anyway. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I'll be like kind of not feeling it, but I feel like we're both ready to go when it's time to go.
I love that.
I don't think, but I definitely could see like, because of our like mismatched schedules, mm-hmm. there's definitely times where like I'm ready to go and she's like asleep or mm-hmm. vice versa.
Yeah, that's like the biggest
issue. And then we just masturbate next to the person and like sometimes I'll like wake up and be like, oh, do you want to help? But otherwise we're just like, she's got it, it's fine, I'm mm-hmm. asleep, you go for it.
I love that. Yeah, that is the hard part, though, when you, like, aren't on the exact same schedule. It's like, how do you fit it in? How do you make time for it without, like, penciling it into your schedule?
Or being like, we're just not going to do anything all weekend except for fuck. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. We have a lot of conversations about just, like, what time we have to actually like connect and how we spend that time, because it's not even just like sex, just like having with people who have busy and opposite schedules. It's really important to like find time for connection in whatever mm-hmm. ways, whether that is like breakfast, days off where we just lay in bed and see what happens, or mm-hmm. like whatever, you know, it is. I don't know. This is like America. We have just like crazy jobs and what's expected of us. And so like schedules are
mm-hmm.
An obstacle in relationships.
Culture. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So we have another question. It's, can two girls come at the same time while having sex?
I mean, they can, but I don't typically do that. I feel like we mm-hmm. normally take turns, mm-hmm. but that's my experience. And I feel like simultaneous orgasms is like an exception, not a like something that typically happens, but that's kind of like a compet myth. Cause I feel like mm-hmm. in straight sex, it's like, oh, I had an orgasm. You didn't? Well, you missed it. And I just like, can't imagine my girlfriend like coming and then her being like, what, you didn't come too? We're done. I'd be mm-hmm. like, the fuck, we're not.
Yeah. I think it's a bonus, not a necessity. And I think it is possible because there are plenty of people who can like get off from, you know, no physical penetration on their end. Like I've seen it mm-hmm. at least. So it is possible. And you know, there are women with penises who they could definitely get off at the same time as you are if you have a vagina. Like there are lots of different configurations of sex that can lead to coming at the same time. But I think
even masturbating next to each other or like mutual fingering each other, 69ing. It's, I feel like it's just like, I feel like any two people, regardless of gender, have both the opportunity mm-hmm. and the ability to not, or to come at the same time, you know, like it's kind of just like what ended up happening. Right. I also feel like I'm kind of like a one big orgasm kind of, you know, girly, whereas my girlfriend's more of like a, she can have like multiple in a short amount of time, whereas like mm-hmm. that's not quite so possible with me. So I feel like sometimes she'll like she'll have an orgasm because I gave her one, and then while she's like doing stuff to me, she'll have like another mini one.
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, I don't know, that probably could happen at the same time. I'm like climaxing, so I'm not like totally aware of whether or not she's also climaxing, yeah. But I feel like that is also possible. Like, depending, I don't know, every body I feel like has different like coming abilities also, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So that could play into it.
And like, I'm personally an empath, so when my girlfriend orgasms, it feels like I am anyways.
I definitely feel something, like,
yeah,
it's not I'm a full like, orgasm, but like it feels like when she finishes, I feel good. I feel better than before she finished. And I don't know how to explain that. It's but satisfying. I do.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck yes, we did it.
Mm-hmm. Good game. Good game, kid.
Yeah. Good game.
Smack around the ass.
Let's do it again sometime.
Yes. Okay. Should we pivot to a more serious topic and then kind of come back to a few sillier ones before we end?
Yeah. So somebody did ask, is having a romantic / intimate relationship with a woman with HSV2 not possible, or just the slimmest chances?
So HSV2, if you don't already know, is herpes simplex virus 2. And there are people with HSV2 who are in romantic and sexual and intimate relationships all over. It's definitely possible. It is mm-hmm. a very common sexually transmitted infection, and it's definitely possible. There are even dating apps just for meeting other people with HSV.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know someone who had it and was on the app and like met a friend through it, and like they would both meet guys through it. So yeah, it's definitely possible. Obviously there's a lot of stigma, but I think as education and everything comes about, people are unlearning the stigma slowly but surely. But I think it's good if you have the means to, as a person with HSV2, to, you know, try and educate and advocate and do all of the things to let people know that, like, hey, you are a person and you're more than this stigma that's attached to you. But I definitely think it is possible to have romance and intimacy and sex.
Yeah, I think anybody who has a condition of any kind, there's going to be like things that you need to do around taking care of your body and like making sure your partner's safe. And we're not medical experts or anything, but we do cover some of these kinds of things in the queer sex education episodes, mm-hmm. Just around like safe sex and that kind of stuff. So obviously anyone with any diagnosis has the ability to have romantic and intimate relationships. But depending on what's going on with your body at any given time, that just like might look and feel a little different. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't have HSV2, but I do have HS, which is, it's not a sexually transmitted infection, but I do get breakouts in sensitive areas. And when I have really big breakouts, I don't want to have sex because mm-hmm. it's like painful or like whatever. And that like changes the dynamic between me and my girlfriend for the period of that breakout. And that's why I say like, it's kind of with like anything going on with your body. If you have like really heavy periods that make you not want to have sex, if you, you know, have what I have, like skin issues or like extreme eczema, there just might be like times where your body is going through things where you're like, now is not the time to also put mm-hmm. it through sex. And mm-hmm. so you can figure out, no matter what your diagnosis is, what does and doesn't work for you. And that happens with communication in your intimate relationship. So like, it's all a matter of talking to the person that you would be intimate with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I guess pivoting more to another question we have that I think comes down to a lot of conversation that can be had with your intimate partner. We got a question that says, what's up with lesbian bed death? And we have a whole episode about lesbian bed death. Definitely go back and listen to that one. I think basically it all, like, if you're not going to listen, too long, didn't want to listen, didn't want to go find it. It all boils down to like communication and finding time to prioritize things and finding time to, or just like prioritizing other types of intimacy. I feel like a lot of our questions that we answer comes down to communication, but I guess it just depends on the exact issue that's coming up that kind of helps you decide like what kind of communication you need to have and when and with who, maybe, because it's always going to differ.
I also think lesbian bed death is a little bit of a myth. Like, I think it comes from like, oh, women don't want to have sex because they think it's gross, and so if there's two women, they would just never have sex ever. And I mean, there's tons of reasons why this stereotype became a thing. And I feel like bed death is a thing, but I think it could happen to literally any couple ever, anywhere, throughout any time.
I was going to say, do you know like, how many cis straight, like, older women I know that are like, I don't have sex anymore. Like, good for me. High five, girl. Like,
crazy.
I think a lot of it is like, it's like, because the intimacy is lacking, I think, a lot of the time. So then the sexual dynamic suffers as well, because a lot of the time you don't want to have sex with someone like you're resenting, or someone you feel distant from. And it's like, not how like much a hot bed one death, night stand like, anymore.
Right. Like, how much is bed death just like a part of evolving out of a relationship, or a part of changing schedules, or like a part of getting older? I don't know. Like, I know there's like all these things about like people fucking in nursing homes and everything, but like, there's also a lot of like tiredness that gets put on your body when you're above the age of like
childcare, menopause. Yeah. There are lots of different things that I think can cause it, and a lot of different ways I think you can fight against it or even lean into it. Maybe you don't want to have as much sex anymore, but you're still loving that partnership with that person.
Yeah.
And it might not be a bad thing for every relationship. It just kind of what works for you.
It's definitely not exclusive to lesbians. That's just life and relationships. It's a part of relationships, period. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, our last question, how can I become more confident topping as a bottom? And as you are starting to go into bottom territory, I feel like this is the opposite question, Cheyenne.
Oh. Ooh. Okay, I feel like that's a good way to put it, because I was like, I don't know how to answer this, but thinking about it from
the opposite, doing the reverse.
Yeah, the opposite perspective. I feel like my confidence with bottoming as a top comes with releasing control. So I feel like the confidence that would come with topping as a bottom would be finding a way to be comfortable with taking control and kind of like leading. And I don't know, maybe you need to like listen to a podcast or like read a book on like leadership skills, or like learn more about like assertiveness, or I don't know, or even just like practice it outside of the bedroom or wherever it is that you're having sex. Just like not giving into like self-doubt, and you know, just taking the reins.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is something that can help. And I feel like as you top more, it becomes less scary. So it's a lot of like just taking a deep dive until it's like, okay, I can do this with my eyes closed and my arms behind my back, kind of thing.
Right.
Like, yeah.
I think my advice for this is like, have fun. And I don't mean that like in a cheesy way, like, oh, just go in and have a fun time. I mean, like, I feel like my girlfriend is more turned on when she can tell I'm having the best time eating her pussy. And when my face is like smushed in there and I was like rolling around in it, because I'm having the greatest time doing so. And then I feel like that's a turn on for her. Like, have some conversations beforehand about what they like, and then just go and have some fun. Like, it's so much better, I feel like, for both people when you can tell everybody's having the best time and everybody's really into it. So like, it shouldn't be like is this all right? Like, you gotta just go in being like, this is gonna be fun, and I'm just gonna get in there. Like Cheyenne said, deep dive, but literally like nose in as far as you can get it.
Yeah. Basically, I think like if you're going in and doing everything in your power to like make it a good experience for you both, that's a good way to be confident, because it's like then you're not thinking about everything you failed to do or everything you may have done wrong, or I don't know. It's like a good way to like focus on what you've done right or what you know they do like or what you can do versus what you can't do. And I feel like that will like allow you to feel more confident in the end and move into the next experience with more confidence. Yeah. Dive into the next experience with more confidence, one might say.
Yeah, because my girlfriend is way taller than me, and in a perfect world, I would love to like pick her around, throw her around, hold her in the air while I fuck the shit out of her, but like physically can't do that. But that's not like what she needs every single time to have fun or something. Like, you work within your means. I know what I'm good at, I know what my strengths are, I know what she likes, and we just go from there and have a good time. It's not like you don't have to be like a porn star just to have somebody have a good sexual experience. It's like we're all just here with the tools that we were given, trying to make each other get off. Like,
yeah,
it's supposed to be fun.
Work on that sexual resume, build it, add skills, subtract what's not working. You got this.
Change the objective. Change your references.
All right. And with that, we are done with the bedroom dynamic episode. If you have any questions for us for future episodes, you can give us a call at 724-209-8877. We have an email address. It's sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com. You can send us questions there. We are also on pretty much every social media platform at Sapphic Survival Guide, except X, which is just at Sapphic Survival. We have a Patreon if you want to go get some bonus content from us. That's patreon.com/sapphicsurvivalguide. And if you liked this episode, which I'm hoping if you listened this far, you did, it would be great if you could go onto whatever platform you listen to the episodes and give us a like, rate, review, send an episode to your friend. Maybe you have someone in your life that you think needs to gain a little bit of a topping confidence as a bottom. You want to send this episode to them. That would be great. And you can find me, Cheyenne, at Hot Mess Band on pretty much any social media platform.
And you can listen to my other podcast, Hello, for your Jersey Shore recaps. Just about finished season 3. And you can follow me anywhere online. Did I say the name of it? That's Hello, wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been a long day, y'all. And you can find me anywhere online at The Leave Regina, including my website, theleaveregina.com. And with that, class is now dismissed.